Welcome to the Mama Needs a Moment podcast. We are your hosts, Chrissy
and Cindy,
co-founders of Her Health Collective.
We are two moms obsessed with changing the way moms take care of themselves. We're so glad you're here. Let's dive in. If you haven't had an opportunity to listen to the previous episode with Jillian Knight, we covered a lot of great topics with her. We began our discussion by first learning about her and that she is a financial therapist. We talked to her about the messages that we've all created about things in our life and how we would know if we have a poor relationship with money that may require financial therapy. And we talk about shifts we can make right away that will begin to fix our relationship with money and help us with giving healthy money messages to our children. In that episode, we also talked to her about a personal finance program that she used that really wasn't beneficial to her and how she shifted into finding something that did feel right for her and her husband. If you haven't listened to that episode, please go back and have a listen because it's a good one.
Yeah. And today we are continuing our conversation with Jillian. We're diving into the four aspects of financial wellness, and Jillian will share with us which of those four aspects she feels is most important. And it will probably make sense knowing that she's a therapist, but it's an important conversation and good to hear. And then we also dive into finances in your relationship, because it is such a sticky, contentious, uncomfortable topic. And it's something that's really, really good to have some solid communication around. So Jillian dives into that with us today. So let's go ahead and dive into the conversation. Do you have any favorite books or podcasts on this topic that you can share with our listeners?
The good thing now is like there are so many books out now about personal finance. A lot of them cover sort of similar concepts, but they come with the perspective of the different people that have written them. And so you get sort of a diverse, like there are books written by women of color. There are books written by people who are neurodivergent. And so like the main thing I think is seeking out people who are like you that you can resonate with when it comes to some of these books, because a lot of times they will share their own story within that book. I have found, so his name is Ramit Sethi. I don't know if you guys have heard of him. He has I Will Teach You to Be Rich. And by that he means like live your rich life, not just like have a lot of money, but it's called I Will Teach You to Be Rich. There's a lot of books that I like, but I keep recommending his just because he breaks down just different aspects of personal finance in a way that is like not shaming, and it just like tells you what he does, and he's doing pretty well. But that I also, for working on your relationship with money, I actually found, so it's a little woo-woo, but in a good way, The Art of Money is the other one. It's by Bari Tesler, B-A-R-I, Tesler. And she's sort of like the godmother of financial therapy. She was sort of doing it before it was called financial therapy. And there's a lot in there if you're looking for sort of an introduction to exploring your own relationship with money, starting to understand it a little better, and starting to put some things in place around some of these things, but you're not sure that you want to jump into financial therapy just yet, that can be a good place to start.
Well, I personally like woo-woo things that are considered woo-woo. So I appreciate you saying that one. I'll be sure to look at them both. They both sound very interesting. When I was doing some research on you and learning more about you, I found a recent LinkedIn post that you had written. And in this post, you were very open about your thoughts on the shifting terms society is using to describe having a relationship with money. So at first you said that it was financial literacy was the term, then it was moved into financial empowerment. And now the popular term we are seeing everywhere is financial wellness. You mentioned being concerned that the most recent term is being used in a way that does not fully encapsulate true comprehensive financial wellness on a deeper level. It seems like a marketing strategy to make more money without adding additional value is what you've also said. You went on in this post to share the four aspects of financial wellness that you feel are important in order to have a deeper understanding of what it means to have true financial wellness. I'd like to go ahead and list these out one at a time, and then have you provide more background on it and why it is an important part of your talks on financial wellness. So the first one I'd like to talk about is financial knowledge. It's also sometimes referred to as financial education or literacy. Can you tell us a little about that?
It's sort of a popular topic now, is, and for good reason, and I'm glad, but increasing financial education in school. So like adding in a financial, like personal finance class in high school.
Yeah.
And that there's this gap in, like, a lot of us grow up without learning about money, and that there are just some basic things that everybody should probably understand about money, that a lot of, like, the financial system has been, it's been made more complicated than it needs to be. And there's, like, a lot of terms that mean things that are not that complicated, like capital means money, or cash, right? One aspect of financial wellness is understanding how money works, is essentially what it is. And so if you don't understand how money works, then you can't manage it better. You can't engage in a meeting with a financial professional in, like, an educated way. You can't really take responsibility for your own financial health if you don't understand how money works.
Okay. So the first one is, when you say financial knowledge, it's having a basic understanding of money and what it is involved with money and the exchange of money. Okay. So number two, the income to afford all of your needs and some of your wants.
So I would say, before I started doing this work, my definition of, if someone were to ask me, like, what does financial wellness, like, what does it mean to be financially well? I would have said it would have been, like, being financially well off, right? So having plenty of money and not needing to worry about finances. And so, like, some people have an income problem, sometimes not at their own, you know, because of their own fault, but some people don't have the money to fund their needs and their wants. And there is sort of this, like, one basic definition of financial wellness that some people will give is being able to meet your needs and some of your wants. And I think that's part of it, but I don't think that's the whole thing.
Okay. And so it sounds to me like when you were doing the Dave Ramsey program, he was telling you to afford all of your needs and to basically not have any of your wants until your needs are fulfilled. Is that what made his a little bit more restrictive?
Right. So it was like, your income should provide for your basic needs and then be paid towards debt and none of your wants.
Right. And you're saying you basically have to have the income to afford all of your needs and be able to have some of your wants as well, because that balance is what happiness is finding that balance.
Right.
Number three, you say a solid financial plan. And then you go on to say it needs to be based on your unique goals and values.
So a financial plan is, it can be with a financial planner, which is like a certified financial planner. And it can also be putting together your own financial plan, where it is focused on your current financial situation, your short-term and long-term goals, and is based on, like we talked about before, your unique values. So thinking about planning long-term and knowing that it's also going to change as your priorities change. So it's a fluid thing. It's not like, we're going to put together a financial plan and then we're just going to follow that for the rest of your life. Like, we're going to put it together. A financial planner is going to put it together with you. And then, you know, as life happens, things change. You're in a different stage of life. You have different financial needs. That plan is going to shift. But if you don't have a plan, then you're just sort of out here living in the now, not really planning for the future.
Got it. Okay. All right. So then the fourth aspect of financial wellness that you teach is healthy thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and behaviors around money. And you went on to say that without number four, the rest of them aren't nearly as valuable. So can you explain number four and what you meant when you said without it, the others aren't nearly as valuable?
To our Patreon supporters, thank you. We appreciate you so much. Our goal has always been for moms to know they're not alone in the tough and challenging phases of motherhood. We know Mama Needs a Moment provides this to our listeners.
We are thrilled with the growth of the podcast over the past 2 years. Last year, Spotify shared that Mama Needs a Moment was in the top 30% most followed podcasts, was heard in 9 countries, and had more content than 97% of other creators in the family category.
We have recently launched a Patreon account for Mama Needs a Moment. This is a great way for you to provide additional support to Her Health Collective.
We've set up 3 options for Patreon supporters, each with its very own perks, such as special events, discounts, and bonus content from each and every podcast guest that is available only to our Patreon supporters.
Will you become a Patreon supporter? It would mean the world to us.
Yeah. So number four is where I spend most of my time as a financial therapist.
Right.
And why I have a job as a financial therapist, because a couple things. Finances for the longest time were so much focused on numbers and math, and in order to be good with money, you needed to be good with numbers and math, and that it was just a matter of logically adding up the numbers and whether the numbers worked or not, right? But that did not account for the fact that 80% of financial decisions are made emotionally. So someone can know, they can have the financial education, they can know all about it. They could be someone who works in finance. They could have an income that supports their needs and wants. They could have a solid financial plan because they are a financial planner. And none of that really matters as much if they feel like they're never going to have enough money, or they're worried about it all going away because maybe they didn't grow up with much. And that's a tendency of people who didn't grow up with much, worrying about it going away. And so it's sort of the like mental wellness aspect of money. You know, I was used to think someone growing up with not a lot of money, that people who had a lot of money or came from money were happier, right? And they didn't have as many problems. But what I learned is like, it doesn't matter how much money you have, everybody's got problems.
Right.
So all of that to say, I just have sort of been encouraging the groups that I talk to consider their relationship with money when it comes to what are your thoughts about it? What's the story you're telling yourself? How does money make you feel? What are your beliefs and how are they showing up in the way that you're managing your money?
All right. So now we've run through all of the 4 aspects, which are 1, financial knowledge, 2, the income to afford all of your needs and some of your wants, 3, a solid financial plan, and 4, healthy thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and behaviors around money. Now, here's the question. Can these all be worked on at the same time, or should one be achieved first and then focus on the others?
I think they're sort of fluid. It's not like a first do this 1 through 4 kind of thing. I think that it really just depends on where a person is at. Some people are going to need more income, but they know what to do with it. Some people understand how money works and are making a good income, but they really need to work on their behaviors with it because it's all going away and they don't know where it's going. So it really just depends on I'm giving you the therapist answer. It depends on the person and whether they have put together a long-term plan, financial plan, or if they've never really even talked about it with their partner or for themselves. So it really just depends on, you know, if you look at all 4 areas and you sort of assess yourself without judgment, because most of us didn't grow up learning any of this stuff, that like, where could I work on some of these things, and where am I getting stuck, and what's going to work best for me?
Speaking of partner, You have a unique perspective on the topic of money and relationships due to your training as both a marriage and family therapist and a financial therapist. Let's be real, talking about money can be such a sensitive topic. So much of what we've talked about with you so far, I see my husband in one side and me on the other, and we're like two opposite sides of the mountain, basically, if money is the mountain. It can be a really sensitive topic, and it has the potential to create a lot of conflict within relationships. I think if you look at the statistics of what causes the most conflict in relationships, it's something like religion, politics, and money. That's not a direct quote on anything. I'm pretty sure that's accurate. So you have shared that the earlier couples start talking about money, the better. Fair, makes sense. How do you suggest a couple broach this topic? Because it can feel really awkward and sticky to bring up money, especially if it's early in a relationship. And in light of that, I'm wondering if you have any guidelines or tips that you can offer on how to make these potentially contentious conversations productive and still friendly, loving, not kicking you out of the house.
Yeah, sure. So I had to do a lot of work on this in my own relationship. And then I've more recently helping couples with it as well. So the thing about financial therapy is, in when it comes to talking with your partner, it's not about the money, right? So we're talking about money, but we're really talking about power and control. We're really talking about identity and self-worth. We're really talking about belonging and all of our fears that we put onto money. We put a lot of stuff onto money. That's not really about the money, right? Like it is, but it isn't. And so when it comes to couples, it is a hard subject to bring up. So it always tends to go better when you focus on your own stuff first, right? And don't come at it from like a blaming. Because what I know from being a therapist is that all behavior makes sense in context, right? And so anything that your partner does with money makes sense based on what they've experienced and how they see the world. And so when you can, one, approach it in a way that's like gentle and that sort of owns your own perspective, like, hey, I would really love it if we could have an open and honest conversation about money, because growing up, my parents thought about money and I don't want us to be one of those couples. So I'd really like it if we could talk about our different perspectives, talk about what we imagine, how we imagine we'll manage money together or not, what our long-term financial goals might be, sort of the role of money in our lives and how we may see that differently or in a similar way. That's how I broach the subject, is really like from a place of curiosity and of like wanting to work together. And then from how couples can have these conversations, I think what's always helpful is to be working on your own relationship with money and understanding your own stuff around it. And being able to really see your partner's financial behaviors in context. So for example, and I don't think he minds me sharing this, but my husband and I, we both grew up without a ton of money, but my parents were more likely to use credit cards than I think his were. And I think he probably technically like grew up with less money than I did. And so he has always had a tendency to hold on to money, and his asking me about how much I spent at Target, this is like when we first got married, was him being worried about us like losing all of our money, which is not, you know, necessarily like a rational thought, but coming from his upbringing, like that makes sense. But I was feeling like he's just trying to control me and tell me what I can and cannot do. And I don't like that. And so if I were to just focus on my own experience of that interaction and where I'm coming from, then we're not going to find a way to work on this together, because we're just going to stay in our own sides of the mountain and not try to get to the other side. So I think having conversations, I even to this day, I find financial questions, like financial therapy questions, that I learned to ask people, and I will ask my husband because I haven't asked him. And it always gives me so much information about like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. And so like the more sense I can make of it, the easier it is. And so I think being able to step out of your own, this is true in any couple's conversation, right? Is like being able to see it from your partner's perspective and like validate that and empathize with them while also holding your own perspective at the same time.
Yeah, I love that. And you mentioned communication. I'm assuming that a monthly state of affairs meeting or something along those lines would be beneficial to keep that line of communication open.
Yeah, I think it's really easy to not talk about money and to let it be something that we're just sort of doing and not paying much attention to or having any kind of intentionality around conversations about it. And my husband and I found this easier to do before we had a child, I'll be honest. But when we're able to, like, we can really sit down and talk about, like, these are the things that are coming up and these are our goals and maybe we need to cut back here and, like, what do you want to do about this? And just sort of have a conversation about it, especially when you have, so, like, we have a goal that we're working on this year financially. And so having those conversations sort of, like, keeps you motivated and keeps you feeling like you're on the same team with this stuff, because sometimes you get away from that.
I was wondering if you could give an example. You were talking about questions that you continue to learn, questions that you want to ask him to find out where he sits with money. Can you give us one or two examples and that we could try out with our partners?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So you may have heard this one, but I found this helpful. It's, what is your first money memory is one. And then the other one that I heard recently that I like is what was your socioeconomic status in middle school and how did you know?
I like that. Because middle school, I talk about this all the time, is such a formative time period. It's also a scary wasteland to me. Like I used to be a high school teacher and I always talk about middle school teachers. Like you are, hats off to you, a breed of your own. Like you deserve an award just for showing up at work every day. I can't imagine. So, and that's when you first are become aware, although it might be younger now, but where you first become aware of status. And I saw a post recently about the tumblers that you can get from Target. Mm. Like you, I don't really pay attention to this kind of stuff, but they're like the Stanley tumblers. And there was a girl who was like devastated because all her friends were making fun of her. And I think she was in fourth grade because she didn't have this cup. And the mom was just like, what is wrong with the world that this is how we're showing up and treating other kids? And I know it's always been that way. I remember it being about shoes, especially for the boys. You had to have certain shoes and middle school. Don't get me started. Thank you for sharing those questions. I'm excited to dive into those with Noah. I have loved this conversation so much. I feel like I've learned a lot and have a bunch of resources I'm excited to dive into also. So thank you very much, Jillian.
Me too, Jillian. This has been wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, Cindy, I love to know, what was your favorite takeaway from part two of our conversation with Jillian?
Jillian was great. She was great to talk to, and she had so many wonderful things to say. And I don't really know if this was from the first episode or the second episode, but I have it written down, and it was something that that really resonated with me because it gave me permission. She said, be willing to individualize your approach based on your values and what's important to you, and give yourself permission to change your approach if it's not working. And that, I don't know if you all are like me, but maybe it's parenting. It feels so good to have permission to do something. And that was the permission to say, this isn't working. Let's go and try something else. But moving on, and I know you wrote down this because it was a statistic. She said 80% of money decisions are made emotionally. You wrote that down too, didn't you? I saw you like,
oh yeah, no, away. Definitely.
So I also enjoy working through the four aspects of financial wellness. We had talked about how the different terms had shifted over the years and how we've landed on financial wellness right now. And when I had asked her if we have to work on them one at a time or if we can kind of work on them all together, her answer was that it's a fluid process and it depends really on the person, on who you are, and really assess yourself without judgment on each of these specific areas. And that was such the therapist coming out in her, because she was like, look at yourself without judgment. Yeah, that is so hard to do. What about you? What are some other things you took away?
Yeah, I loved how she mentioned that she came to this point where she realized that just because you have more money doesn't mean you have no problems. And that's something I've read, I've talked about many times, I've had conversations with people. As she said it, I actually had the more money, more problems come into my head. But I mean, it's true. I think it's just sometimes different kinds of problems, or even the same. I mean, problems within our relationships. Money doesn't solve everything. Yeah. Money doesn't fix you. Money doesn't make you happy. Money can make certain aspects of life easier up to a certain point. And then beyond that, it can't make you happy.
Yeah. What about the part where she started discussing things with your partner? I wrote down a bunch of stuff there. That's hard. That's tough.
I obviously love that she says focus on your own stuff first. I think that that's essential with any aspect of, you know, trying to solidify, improve, cement a relationship. You've got to be in your own healthy state of mind first. And I love when she said that all behavior makes sense in context, because we have to think about how we see the world and how our partner sees the world and the experiences that they've had. And however they're coming to a situation around money, it does make sense when you think about the experiences they've had, how they've been raised, the financial traumas they've experienced. Right. It all makes sense in context. And I think that's really important to take into any conversation you have. And I also really loved this concept of it's not about the money. It's about the power, the control, the identity, the self-worth, the fears. I think that that is so true. Money is one of those things that just gets bottled up into so many other deeply rooted emotions and struggles, and it can come out in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I wrote that down too, and I'm really glad you brought that up. And our bonus question for our Patreon subscribers was also wonderful. In this particular question, we asked her about financial trauma and working through the trauma, what it means to have financial trauma. She gave us a few examples of what financial trauma may be. She also gave us some tips on how to move beyond the financial trauma to get to a place of financial freedom. It was a wonderful conversation that we had on that as well. So if you are not a Patreon subscriber and you'd like to hear this, come on over. We'd love to welcome you.
We've enjoyed hanging out with you today, friend. We hope you got to finally enjoy a hot cup of coffee as you listened. Make sure you follow us so you're the first to know when we drop a new episode.
If you've enjoyed your time with us, let us know by leaving a review. We always love hearing from you. Until next time, stay true to you.